I was out on the ocean for a week and wanted the gaming industry to stay sane for just 1 week. Unfortunately, gaming journalism and anticipated game took a big hit on Thursday. Tonight is May the 4th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk.
Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bobby? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters.
I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it.
Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say?
And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
You see, this is a really interesting day for me because I grew up as a Star Trek kid. I grew up on Star Trek. And now we don't get our own number. Anyway, hello, everybody, and welcome to a May the 4th edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this May the 4th over on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, welcome. Thank you so much. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. And, you can come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, such as PodCulture saying, Trek has first contact day. I just never remember when Zefren Cochrane actually broke the warp speed barrier, which allowed the Vulcans to come visit Earth. And Fifth Dream does say there was that one Star Trek day in 1701. So, you know, I guess that would be January 17th. Would that be 17? Because everywhere else in the world that's not here puts the day before the month. Anyway. It's Star Wars Day. May this episode number 934 be with you. This is a podcast, though, so if you're not listening on May the 4th, hello. You can join our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, is where you can come find us throughout the week and suggest stories and stuff. And then you can also yell at me for saying that, you know, yes, I was a Star Trek person. I was never a Star Wars kid. But it is absolutely true that, you know, there is really only one good part of Star Wars that I must share with everybody. As we all know, and I'm risking my copyright strike here, you know, Jason Derulo has nothing on Han Solo when he's singing about being Han Solo. And I used to play this all the time when we were on radio and didn't have to worry really too much about DMCA strikes. So, you know, this is the best version of this song. I don't want to hear anything about riding solo. It's this song. It should have been in the trailer for the Solo movie. It is one of the very few things that Kinect actually gave us that was good. And if you disagree with me, be quiet. Because this is the one that... Anyway. So, you can look it up on YouTube. Kinect Star Wars... I'm Han Solo. I don't want to get a DMCA strike here on the Twitch television, so I will not play any more of that. But, and Rob Roberts says, I kind of miss these Kinect dance games, but only kind of. I actually finally upgraded the Xbox One that I had in my main room. I put my Xbox One X that I had and upgraded to a Series X. And that meant I had to finally disconnect the Kinect. Because I have like Fantasia for the Xbox One, and I had and you know, obviously the other Kinect games and stuff. So finally, I do not have a Kinect in my house, so I cannot play any of those Kinect games anymore. And so I also miss those games because now I can't really play them anymore. I could hook up the Xbox One somewhere else, but who needs time with that? Who needs time for that? Anyway. Let's go ahead and get into the rest of the show. And I was gone, obviously, for 2 weeks. And I was out last week. I typically try my best not to advertise when I'm going to be gone for a week, but some people might be able to figure it out. But anyway, I was gone for a week. I was out on a boat in the middle of the ocean. I do this a lot, you know, it seems. About once a year, sometimes twice a year, if I'm really, really lucky and have a lot of money saved up. And I try not to talk about them, so I go on cruises. Me and my wife, we do cruises a lot. And I try not to talk about them too much because I do realize that they're very big financial commitments. And, you know, you are on a boat in the middle of the ocean, and that is not everybody is okay with that, and that's totally fine. And, you know, not everybody likes the idea of them, and that's totally fine. But what I did want to talk about is the cruise line that I went on, because it actually has some of the best gaming options at sea. And when I say gaming, I don't mean gambling. I don't mean casino. I mean actual games that you and I would care about here listening to this podcast. So I went on Virgin Voyages for the first time. I went on the Scarlet Lady. This is Richard Branson's cruise line. It is adults only. You have to be 18 years old to sail. No kids, no exceptions. So it's 18 and up. And so it's very much geared towards adults. And one of the things that was really, really interesting about this cruise, and I knew this going into it, is that a lot of cruise lines, they'll have like a library on board, and there will be board games. And when they say board games, they mean Monopoly and maybe a chess board and a checkers board, and that's it. Virgin's not like that. So when they mean board game library, they actually mean a board game library. So like, we're talking like actual good games here. So I'm pausing a video here and I'm going to kind of narrate, but just right off the bat at the top left, you see Ticket to Ride. You have three versions of Exploding Kittens and one, well, two Exploding Kittens, obviously the NSFW version because no kids, but then Zombie Kittens. There's a copy of Catan, Settlers of Catan. There's Azul. There's some other, you know, actual good games in here, but also some party games like they've got Telestrations. No Cards Against Humanity. I didn't see any Cards Against Humanity, but, you know, there's Telestrations. There's some other like party games. They have some Uno decks. Phase 10 was there. And then they do have your Monopoly and different Risk and Scrabble and things like that. And these are just open. You can at any time you can go through. They have Clue over here. You know, Mysterium, they have a couple copies of Mysterium. If you see these cases, those are dominoes. There's dominoes in that. And you can just pick them up and play them. And you can have, they have Stratego, and they also have in the Lego game, it's some puzzles. So they're big on their puzzles and everything. You can just pick them up and you play them. And then also, if you prefer your digital games, then they got you covered here too. So they've got all these are all kind of like multi-cabs, but you got Donkey Kong and Mario. But then they've also got Daytona USA. Unfortunately, the second player was broken the whole cruise. But you get your old school games on the right with like Golden Axe and Centipede, but also Sunset Riders and Mortal Kombat. And then they have one cocktail cabinet that has multiple different Namco games in there. And unlike other cruise lines, these are all on free play. So if you really wanted to play some of those games, you just walked up and you didn't have to pay for them. They weren't like extra tokens or something. Other cruise lines, Royal Caribbean, Carnival, those, they have an arcade, but you have to pay, you know, $1 or $2 per play. And this is just, it's there. Now, did I play any of those games? No. Every time I went in and had time, somebody was actually playing Daytona USA, which is probably the only game I would have played there. Now, Esther Matt says those aren't some Ultracade reproduction cabs. Those look like some legit cabs. No, they are Ultracade because you can change the game on them. And I had seen these on other cruise ships, and I even brought it up when I was on Royal Caribbean cruise a couple years ago. So you can go out and you change the game. So like the Mario Brothers cabinet had both the Mario Brothers versus and Super Mario Brothers, the arcade version. The Namco ones had 6-in-1, stuff like that. But they're on free play. So like the only legit cabinets they had were the ones on the left of the thing when I was showing it. And I'll actually go through it again here. Let's see if it'll... So, like, the Mario Brothers and Donkey Kong, those were multi-cabs. But the Daytona USA is legit. Sit-down, racing wheel, and all that stuff. But, and I believe the Mortal Kombat one is legit, and the Sunset Riders, those are legit cabinets. But The other ones that were on the right here, those are multi-cabinets. And this cocktail cabinet is multi-cabinet because it was showing Racer X and then Pac-Man's Pixel Bash flipped on the screen when I was there. So I was very surprised. I was very surprised when I first learned about it. I knew about it going in. Also, one of the things that they do there, which is relevant to this, and then I'm going to stop talking about cruises, is that instead of a single cruise director, which is what you've probably seen on like the Love Boat or if you've been on any other cruises, Virgin Voyages does a thing called the Happenings Cast, which is multiple people all acting as the cruise director. And these members of the Happening Cast have very specific areas. So you'll have, you know, one that's the balancer is the one that runs all the fitness classes and does all the fitness stuff. The artist is for like a lot of the artist art stuff, but they have one literally called the gamer. And so there is literally one person that works for the cruise line that's one of the conglomerate cruise directors that is specifically maintains the board games, the video games. He'll play games with guests. He and I were talking about some stuff. He was asking me for some suggestions and stuff like that. So there actually is like a dedicated gamer on board that also does a lot of the other stuff that happens on Virgin Cruises, which is outside the scope of this podcast. But he was there. So his name was Tommy on the Scarlet Lady. It is currently moving to Barcelona. And it's going to be in the Mediterranean. I was on the last cruise out of Miami before it moved over to Barcelona to spend the summer out there. So Tiger Law says, last cruise I went, the cruise director also hosted shows, and he can also sing as well. So, they all host different shows. There was different trivia, no video game trivia, but it was like TV trivia, movie trivia, stuff like that. And different members of the Happenings cast would host those. And some of the shows, the bingo, whatever. So the gamer was involved in a lot of that stuff as well. So it was a really interesting experience. It's a lot different from other cruise lines. And like I said, talking about the rest of the cruise outside of the gaming is outside the scope of this podcast. But I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to going on one again. So now let's talk about gaming. And I did have Wi-Fi. I did know what was going on. It's included. The base Wi-Fi. I couldn't use YouTube or Twitch or any streaming services. But, you know, checking social media because they want you to post on Instagram about their stuff, I had. So I knew what was going on, and Thursday, May 1st, was a really bad day for a lot of people, apparently. And the first thing is the most anticipated game. I believe this did win the most anticipated game at the Game Awards, right? It's going to win the most anticipated game at the Game Awards yet again because it has been delayed to next year. Rockstar Games says that Grand Theft Auto 6 is now set to release on May 26th. 2026. And they actually say, quote, "We are very sorry that this is later than you expected. The interest and excitement surrounding a new Grand Theft Auto has been truly humbling for our entire team. We want to thank you for your support and your patience as we work to finish the game. With every game we have released, the goal has always been to try to exceed your expectations, and Grand Theft Auto 6 is no exception. We hope that you understand that we need this extra time to deliver at the level of quality you expect and deserve. We look forward to sharing this more information with you soon," unquote. And every Grand Theft Auto game has been delayed from its original release date. Nobody cares in the end. And I know that's going to be a callous thing to say because, now we don't even think about it. We don't think about the fact that I think GTA 4 was delayed multiple times. GTA 5 was delayed multiple times. We don't remember that anymore, and nobody cares. Now, Rob Roberts says, if this means that they aren't crunching, great, but I'm not holding my breath. They claim, in other things, that they are trying to do this to avoid crunch. They would have to crunch to get the game out this year, and they don't want to do that with the state of the industry. Now, if they're telling the truth or not, I don't know. But they're going to be delaying the game, and where normally in the past I would say things like, you know, oh, nobody didn't buy a game just because it wasn't released at a specific time. If it's a good game, they're going to buy it no matter when it comes out. There is the extra there is the extra element of the price increases that games have been going on. And we just hit $70 games, and then Nintendo and now Xbox and others, and I'm not even talking about the Xbox price increases. That didn't make my show roll this week. But all the others, they're starting to talk about $80 games, and it could be that maybe next year somebody tries to put out a $90 game and Grand Theft Auto could be this. And that could be the point of no return for someone, even a big Grand Theft Auto super fan, who doesn't have that kind of money. Because while the price of games are going up, our salaries and wages are not. That is the big, that is the underlying problem, is that our salaries are not going up to match what all these games are being priced at now. Period. That is the underlying problem. So it could mean that, you know, it might have been an $80 game if it released this year, but it might be a $90 game next year. I don't know. Nobody knows for sure. I do know that some content creators were saying we live in a world where Mario Kart World costs more than Grand Theft Auto 6. And I don't think that's happening, especially not next year. Next year, it will absolutely be at least $80 because Mario Kart World would have sold really well. Pod Culture claims that Grand Theft Auto 6 will be $100. And I don't know about that. And here's why. Because I can't see it not releasing without a Grand Theft Auto Online something or other, which means a lot of microtransactions. And that subsidizes some of the cost. When you have a lot of microtransactions like a Grand Theft Auto Online, you can subsidize some of the cost and get people in. And and I expect there to be some kind of online component to this that will have those microtransactions. And E3VL says, that doesn't stop Madden when it was 70. Yes, but 70 is the current, and while it sucks, while what I'm about to say sucks, $70 is the current accepted value that that games companies are willing to sell out and lots of people are willing to buy at. 100 is not the current accepted for the base product. Right now, we wish it was 50. We grumbled when it was 60. Now, all your AAA titles were 70. And then Nintendo and now Xbox is bringing some stuff up to make it being 80. That's still less than 100. So GTA 6, with all their microtransactions, doesn't need to make the base price $20 higher than whatever the standard is in the gaming industry because of all those microtransactions. Now, ZenMonkey11 does say, well, wait until they see the price of collector editions. Yes. Now, the collector editions, those are absolutely going to be up in like the upper hundreds, maybe 200s. I think, you know, upper 100, lower 200. I think that's where the collector's editions are going to be. But the base game just by itself, I see it being whatever the industry standard, which you can argue is going to be too high at $80. Very valid argument. I'm with you there. But I don't see them going higher than the industry standard for the base game. I don't think they need to. Now, S. Jared Matt says, this game is going to be $90. Add another several months to already the most expensive title made in our lifetime, development cost-wise. Because it is, while maybe the salary of the developer isn't more, the time that they are being paid to work on that title is longer, so the developer is ultimately making more money for working on the game than they would if it had been in crunch mode and, you know, released in 2025 like they had put in the trailer last year. So the game you're not going to be playing anytime soon or ever is Titanfall, because EA has stopped working on it, the new Titanfall. IGN reports that in addition to the roughly 100 job cuts, IGN reported earlier today at Respawn Entertainment, EA has made wider cuts across its organization today, impacting around 300 individuals in total, including those already reported at Respawn. IGN understands that these wider cuts largely impacted EA's experiences team, which includes groups such as EA's fan care team and various others working on a customer support and marketing, though other EA departments saw reductions as well. As with other cuts at EA, those impacted will be given the opportunity to apply for other roles internally prior to being let go. An EA Sports spokesperson said in an official statement, quote, as part of our continued focus on our long-term strategic priorities, we've made select changes within our organization that more effectively aligns teams and allocates resources in service of driving future growth, unquote. And they say, quote, we are treating our people with care and respect throughout this process, working to minimize impacts by helping affected employees explore new opportunities within the company when possible and providing support during the transition, unquote. The roughly 100 jobs impacted at Respawn included individuals in development, publishing, and QA workers on Apex Legends, as well as smaller groups of individuals working on the Jedi team and two canceled incubation products, one of which we reported on back on in March, and the other which was, per Bloomberg's reporting, a new Titanfall game, unquote. So you're not going to be able to play... You're not going to be able to play Titanfall, and there's a lot of people over at EA... That they let go, including at Respawn Entertainment, which is mostly known for Call of Duty. So hopefully they will all land on their feet. So let's talk about the big story that I wanted to talk about. And Tiger Law does say that, yes, you can still play the last two Titanfall games. They are still around, and Questper says the new Titanfall game was said to be another extraction shooter set in that universe. So the big story, though, so at least the original Titanfalls are still there, but at least the big ones, the big story I wanted to talk about is about gaming media. And we've lost a good one. And I know that not everybody thought they were one of the good ones. I know that that's not something that a lot of people agree with, but I've gotten to know people that used to work here at this place, and they don't work there anymore. But you know, it was good, and I sourced them a lot. And we're talking about Polygon. And Kotaku reports that the video game website Polygon has been sold to click farm powerhouse Valnet, and much of its masthead has been laid off, Kotaku has learned. The sale was subsequently announced in a press release. Multiple staff members have posted online about losing their jobs or about colleagues now being out of work. Polygon co-founder and editor-in-chief Chris Plant says, quote, I'm no longer with Polygon. If you're hiring, please consider the many talented writers and editors now on the market. Every one of them deserves a spot on your staff. I won't be talking more about the sale because I wasn't involved. Going to go hang out with my kid, taking wins where I can, unquote. The sale was confirmed in a press release which did not mention the layoffs. The price of the deal was not disclosed. Sources tell Kotaku that deputy editor Maddie Myers and games editor Zoe Hanna are among those that remain at Polygon. Executive editor Chelsea Stark said the layoffs included over 20 staff. Vox Media did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Senior reporter Nicole Carpenter shared, quote, I'll say more later, but I no longer have a job. I'm looking for work, as are many of my amazing colleagues. I have lots of ideas and things I'd like to write. I'm really in shock, unquote. And then senior writer Michael McWhirter says, quote, I had a great time working at Polygon. Please let me know if you have any cool job openings, unquote. Founded in 2012 under Vox Media, the site quickly established itself as one of the premier outlets for original reviews, reporting, and cultural analysis in the world of gaming. Polygon's coverage of video games, movies, TV, comics, and board games are some of the best around, while its forward-looking design sensibility helped elevate the way stories were presented and told online. Valnet is based in Montreal and operates Screen Rant, Game Rant, comic book resources, and other mass aggregators. The company is run by Hassan Youssef, who got his start in digital media with online porn websites, saying, quote, the addition of Polygon not only strengthens our editorial muscle, but also amplifies our ability to deliver unmatched value to both audiences and advertisers, unquote. That's what he said in a press release. Advertisers. The Vox Media Union blasted the sale and layoffs, which occurred as it bargains over its next contract, says, quote, arguably even more demoralizing is Vox Media's decision to sell a lauded games website to a company known for alleged exploitative conditions and for devaluing rigorous journalism in favor of churning out content. Vox Media's lack of respect for Polygon's reputation in game media, the hard work and passion of its staff, with a robust community of gamers and fans who support it, could not be clearer, unquote. It also continued, quote, losing Polygon to such a company is not just a loss for Vox Media, but for our industry and internet culture as a whole. From a sustainability perspective, it makes a little financial or long-term sense and speaks to a lack of care and consideration for this company and its staff, unquote. And Tiger Claw says, Polygon, if I remember, was started by former people from Kotaku. And so that's what Vox Senior Vice President Chris Grant, who was Polygon's founding editor-in-chief, when he shared, he talked about his insights into the deal and the frustration. He posted about it on Blue Sky, saying, quote, 14 years ago, I pitched what would become Polygon to a startup called Sports Blogs, Inc. on the unfurnished third floor of a D.C. townhome. I held a laptop on my knees and went through a deck. Today, that same company, now called Vox Media, sold Polygon to Valnet. The press release proudly calls Polygon a premium gaming publication, but Valnet literally refused to meet with me, the senior vice president of Vox Media, or answer a single question of mine throughout this process. They were wildly incurious about how a gaming publication even becomes premium. I really, truly hope that the remaining Polygon team gets a chance to continue to work. We all cared about so much, but somehow this is the end of my journey with the thing I created. My most heartfelt thanks to the entire team. I am so sorry things ended this way, unquote. Now, the thing that's interesting about this, what they did is that Vox Media actually has a union. The workers unionized, and they have a union, and they were in the process of bargaining. And I believe the only people laid off from Polygon in the sale were the union members. I don't know that for sure, but that's some of the stuff that I was reading, was that the people who didn't join the union that were part of Polygon staff are now continuing. They were kept, and they are still with Polygon over at Valnet. The people that did unionize, well, they don't. They're not part of it anymore. And Tarklaw says, I read that Valnet is really bad there about content farming. And so Valnet, they do a lot of the stuff where it's very clickbait. Everything they do is clickbait. They are basically trying to be at the top of the search results, and they're trying to stay relevant by posting a whole bunch of articles. They're the ones that will go and like use Reddit threads as news. And they'll actually talk about something, you know, somebody posts something on Reddit, and you might find it on those sites. They also do a lot of guides. They're very guide heavy and, you know, answering questions like, how do I change the difficulty in this game? And, you know, Game Rant will have an article about it. So that's probably what they're, you know, going to have to turn Polygon into, because they will tell you that, you know, Polygon is a great brand that they can just make even better. So The Verge reports that Polygon, The Verge's former sister site, dedicated to covering gaming and entertainment, is now owned by Valnet, a company that owns more than 27 different brands covering gaming, entertainment, sports, travel, and more. The transition is, let's say, ongoing. A day after the acquisition, the site still said it was a Vox Media property, and the site's coverage continued more or less uninterrupted. But Valnet has indeed acquired Polygon, so to learn more about the deal, why the company acquired it, and the future of the site, they got on the phone with Valnet's head of mergers and acquisitions, Roni Azumanian, which I don't know how to pronounce it, so I'm not going to try to say it again. Polygon is a AAA gaming brand that Valnet has been of high interest for some time, according to what he said. Valnet's gaming portfolio also includes Game Rant, The Gamer, Fextra Life, Dual Shockers, Hardcore Gamer, and Open Critic. He says that the company is bullish on gaming culture. Valnet initiated the Polygon deal, and he said that the conversation started a few months ago. He declined to share the terms of the deal. So I wonder if this is union busting. Because from what I understand, Polygon was the most successful site at Vox Media. It was the one bringing in the most money to Vox Media, but they unionized. Going forward, Valnet wants to ensure that Polygon has the deepest coverage of the gaming space. He declined to share specific coverage expectations, but said Valnet will, quote, do what's right for Polygon. And we think Polygon has a lot of potential and could be much more, unquote. See, what is right for Polygon is whatever Valnet says was right for Polygon, not necessarily what is right for us as the readers. It's for them and their advertisers. They said this is going to be better for their advertisers. And that means more content that is more SEO driven. They wanted to keep, you know, they wanted to have deep coverage of the gaming space, but they let go the people that literally did all that deep coverage of the gaming space. Those people no longer work there. Around 10 existing Polygon staffers are moving over to the site's new owner. Matt Patches, who was previously Polygon's executive editor, is heading things up for now. Remember, they got rid of the editor-in-chief. Valnet is also rebuilding the team, investing in its operations, and making sure it builds Polygon for the next 5 to 10 years. Not past that, but just for the next 5 to 10 years. Valnet wants to recruit AAA writers and editors for Polygon. When he asked what the balance might be of full-time hires and contractors, no specifics on that, but said, "We will do it right, but they won't be unionized, which will be right for them." He also deferred on whether Polygon would hire another editor-in-chief, saying that right now the focus is on ensuring continuity following the close of the deal, which was great considering you got rid of 20 of the 30 people. Fifth Dream says, quote, "It's a good little site. We can make it better by making it suck." The sale resulted in most of Polygon staff leaving or being laid off, including former editor-in-chief Chris Plant. Chris Grant, Vox Media's group publisher of The Verge and formerly Polygon, said that Valnet refused to meet with him. So The Verge asked the head of mergers and acquisitions about the post, reading the part of the sentence, and he says that Valnet predominantly dealt with Jim Bankoff, the CEO, and says, quote, "I'm not in a position to answer why he didn't talk to Chris Grant," unquote. Valnet does plan to keep Polygon's archives available. GameStop did to Game Informer, but Game Informer's back now with their archives, but not the vault. When he asked if Valnet plans to introduce AI-generated stories into Polygon, which has been a disconcerting trend at other publication, the Merchant Acquisition actually said, quote, "Not at all." That's what he said. Now, he's just the head of mergers and acquisitions. He doesn't actually determine what's right for Polygon. They may say that AI-generated stuff is what's right for Polygon. He also asked if Valnet more broadly is making changes in response to a recent report about Valnet from The Wrap, which included an allegation from one former contributor about almost sweatshop-level working conditions at a Valnet publication. He pointed out to Valnet's press release about the recent defamation lawsuit filed against The Wrap. So there was a whistleblower that came out and said that there were really bad working conditions at Valnet. And so Valnet sued the site that reported on what the whistleblower said. A year from now, he does not expect things to be that different. Valnet wants to maintain course and keep investing in the brand, even though they fired 20 of the 30 people that was providing the content that made Polygon Polygon. And he deferred to the operations side of Valnet whether the company wants Polygon to switch to scored reviews, because Polygon famously does not do scored reviews, which means it's not on Metacritic, which might not be the right thing for Polygon. And Questbusters, theorizes, quote, "Our AI writing articles need a platform to reach a wide audience. Let's just go buy one and go on autopilot," unquote. And Tigerclaw says this, "The fact of the matter is the people that were left will start their own site and continue covering games like they always did. Once a major website gets sold and the people who run it gone, they're just going to regroup elsewhere eventually." That is very much, it sometimes happens. We hear about the successes, but not everybody can afford to take a risk like that. That's why they work for a site like Polygon at a large company, because they can't take the risk of going solo. Maybe they have a family. Maybe they have too much student loan debt. Maybe they have a bunch of other stuff. And that we hear that from game developers, like when a game studio shuts down, people are like, "Oh, it's fine. They're just going to make a new studio." Not everybody can do that. And there's talent that just leaves the industry because they need to go do something stable. And they were at Polygon. They were at Vox Media that was stable. And they're laid off now. They need a stable gig. And going and making something and being on Patreon is not stable. And if you don't have a bunch saved up or a bunch invested or, you know, anything like that, going into business for yourself is scary. Like, why aren't any of you doing it? Right? I'm here doing this show and running Vogue Network. I have a day job that's stable that pays for this. And that's why I don't, that's why we don't try to like get your money all the time. Although please, subscribe to our Twitch channel, but we don't have a Patreon right now. We don't have you know, we're not trying to like shove merch down your throat right now. We're just here doing this on Sunday nights. And I can't afford to try to take this full time because I don't know if I'd be successful enough at it. Because there's a lot more into running a business than just doing the output of the business. And as Jerry Wintermatt says, going solo requires capital. Not everyone can spend a large amount of money to start something and possibly not take an income for a bit. I would play the going solo, but I still don't have internet over here. I still don't have DNS over here. So, yeah. And Questper says 401ks and health benefits aren't going to fund themselves. That's true. And then the other site that went away is it's not going away, but it's gotten changed a little bit. And that is Giant Bomb. Kotaku reports that Giant Bomb's future is uncertain following a showdown with parent company Fandom, which also owns GameSpot, over editorial interference. Creative director Dan Rickard announced on a recent live stream that he would no longer be appearing on the Giant Bombcast, and co-host Jeff Grubb confirmed on social media on Thursday that he's no longer with the company. Giant Bomb content is currently on hold while Fandom engages in a strategic reset and realignment of our media brands, it confirmed to Kotaku. And so Jeff Grubb says, quote, "Well, that was a dream come true. Knew it wouldn't last, though," unquote. And he joined Giant Bomb in 2022 after a reshuffle that saw the departure of longtime host and co-founder Jeff Gerstmann. He posted this on Blue Sky. Says, quote, "Out of a job at the moment, but I'll always be doing Game Mess," unquote. And that's his podcast that he does with GamesBeat reviews editor and Giant Bomb contributor Mike Minotti. And Minotti wrote in a separate post, quote, "Needless to say, I will no longer be contributing to Giant Bomb. Nothing but love to all the wonderful people there and at GameSpot. Jeff was a workhorse and a hero for the way he shouldered on so much responsibility there, and I am furious with the way the execs treated him," unquote. The news follows an ominous pause on Giant Bomb streams at the end of April in the takedown of an episode of the Giant Bombcast from YouTube this week after the host mocked apparent brand safety concerns recently foisted upon them by the management at Fandom. Then in a live stream on April 30th, Rickard, a member of Giant Bomb from between 2014 and 2020, returned in 2022, announced that he would no longer be appearing on the show and had no interest in Fandom's vision for Giant Bomb's future. A spokesperson for Fandom told Kotaku in an email, quote, "As you know, we've temporarily paused Giant Bomb live streaming, and that content is currently available on demand for our audience. We understand this programming pause isn't ideal for our audience, but it's part of a strategic reset and realignment of our media brands. We have some creative ideas for the future of Giant Bomb, and we're actively working on that, so we'll be able to communicate more about that soon," unquote. The wiki company, whose business model of monetizing free contributor pages with autoplay video ads and other intrusive website practices, has led many communities to depart its network. I believe we still have a wiki over there for one of our shows. They purchased Giant Bomb and GameSpot in 2022. Less than a year later, it instituted cuts to both sites. Fandom's ad business faced scrutiny following a 2024 analytics report that questioned the brand safety of some of the content the company was running ads against on its user-generated wiki pages. Some of that was us, apparently. The rest of the latest incarnation of Giant Bomb currently includes senior producer Jan Ochoa, general manager Jeff Bacalar, and editors Tamur Hussein and Lucy James. It's unclear how many will remain amid the current fallout or what is the future of the website, which hosts a long-running forum and annual Game of the Year list from personalities across the gaming industry, will be. Now, Giant Bomb was created out of, I believe it was GameSpot. Jeff Gerstmann worked at GameSpot, gave Hitman a bad review, and got flack from them because they were a big advertiser and, you know, that's, I think, the genesis of it. And it was basically, we're going to leave a giant bomb on the industry, and we're just going to be bombastic and outspoken and everything. And now they've got new content. Oh, it was Kanan Lynch. I'm sorry. Tiger Claw corrects me. It was Kanan Lynch. Obviously, I don't have internet right, or I don't have a DNS server right now to check internet. But I'm still streaming, so let's continue on. Kanan Lynch 2 is what it was. They were like, we're going to be raw, we're going to be unfiltered, we're not going to be, you know, beholden to anybody else. And apparently on that Giant Bombcast, they were actually mocking the content guidelines because they were turning everything PG. And Giant Bomb was never intended to be a PG site. It was never intended to be a PG community, for better or for worse. And that fundamentally changes what Giant Bomb is, which is why you're seeing these departures, because they're like, that's not our DNA. But fandom wants to do what's best for Giant Bomb, which is what's best for them. Unfortunately, Giant Bomb, it's going to be very different. It's probably going to just regurgitate other things. You're going to see a lot of the personalities leave, because one of the things that we're seeing a lot of now in, you know, the big box media sites is that personality is kind of going out the window. People don't want personalities. People want information. And that's why AI and ChatGPT and other large language models and other generative AI, let's be specific here, generative AI, that's what they're turning to, is because they assume that we don't want personalities. We just want the information. We want to know, is the game good or not? We don't care about your personal feelings. We don't care about any of that, even though, you know, reviews are subjective by nature. There's no way to do an objective review of a game, of a piece of art, because it's not a while it is a consumer product, it's still art. And you can't do an objective review of art. It's just impossible to do. We're seeing that a lot of the personalities are going to be gone from the main sites. And you're going to see the ones that can, that did really well and saved a bunch of money, you're going to find them doing Patreon and doing things here on Twitch, doing podcasts, doing their own site. Aftermath is a good site that has a lot of people, like expats from other places like Vice's Waypoint and all those other stuff. Aftermath is a good site that they're all going to, and it's completely subscription-based. You have to have a subscription to read their stuff. We're going to start seeing that more. And PodCulture says, most of us here listen for both personal opinions and if the games are good, at least to VOG. And Questress says, I'm not excited for the future of Giant Bomb as an endless stream of media pop-ups. And I got to say something. I'm going to respond a little bit, because I love the fact that we have the audience that we do. It's actually a small audience here on VOG, comparatively. We aren't the biggest. We aren't the loudest. We aren't the angriest. And we don't have the biggest numbers. We don't get access to anything. We're not influential enough in the grand scheme of things. We have an amazing core audience that does care. And y'all are amazing about that. But the majority, which is not us, it's not the people that listen to this, the majority don't care about the personality. They don't care about the personal feelings of who's writing about something. They just want, is the game good? Because I was talking to somebody on the cruise that I was on, and this came up, and they're like, well, I mean, I don't read Polygon anymore anyway. It became too personal. You know, they don't trust reviews anymore. They go to Twitch, they go to Steam, the reviews page, and they watch Twitch. And that's what they do. And so that is going to be, that's pretty much, I bet, the majority of people. They don't care about game reviews, or they hate them. And the companies are trying to pivot to see what they can do to bring in revenue. They are never going to get those people back, but they could get the people who were like, how do I quick save in Oblivion Remastered? NE3VL says, it's all filled with politics right now, but you got to realize politics has inserted itself into gaming in a big way. I talked a lot about politics a couple weeks ago. You know, because you can't avoid it anymore. It's you may not care about politics, but politics absolutely cares about you. And E3VL says, especially user reviews. Well, people are now there. There's always been people who have been like, you know what? That's whatever's going on here. That's not right. Even when it was the sign of the times, it's just people are now able to say it louder, and people are able to say it more often. And so they feel more empowered to say, hey, you know, this thing you're doing, it's not right. And that platform wasn't there. But people absolutely felt it when nobody cared about it, quote unquote. And Questbuster says, this discussion reminds me of how Computer Gaming World wrestled with adding a scoring system after decades of focusing on scoreless reviews in the 80s and 90s. And we've even talked about it. And I think what we did on Fog when we did reviews was we did grades, letter grades, A plus, A, stuff like that, which was not a number. Because that way we couldn't say, oh, you gave this a 7 and this a, you know, a 10 or whatever. Which, you know, that was one of the things that was said to me is like, well, IGN rated Oblivion Remastered a 7.5 when they rated the original a 10. What? How did it go from 10 to 7.5? And I'm like, well, you got to compare it against 2025. Like, the reviewer that's reviewing Oblivion Remastered 2025 is comparing it and reviewing it alongside the norms of 2025, not 2007 when Oblivion came out. So, yeah, the original at the time got a very high score from the same outlet, different reviewer. It was many, many years ago. It was almost 18 years ago. But, you know, they were comparing it with the other things available at the time, whereas 18 years have passed. As Sheridan Bat says, we're more mindful about others now more than 10, 20 plus years ago, despite society's best efforts currently. So, yeah. We're a lot more mindful. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Sound Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and I am going to see if I can call them up, because I bet I'm not going to be able to. So we're going to see. Yeah, and it's saying, yeah, I'm not going to be able to connect, because unfortunately, My DNS servers are down. My internet is up, but my DNS servers are down. So anything I'm already connected to is fine. Anything I'm not yet connected to is not. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to actually connect with Rob to see what's going on Orange Lounge Radio tonight, because my internet... And you know what? Here's the funny thing. I bet I'll restart my modem and everything will be fine. But unfortunately, it happened like 15 minutes into the show, because everything was fine for the first 15 minutes. So unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to join this call. So that really sucks. So I would normally at this point talk to Rob and see, hey, what's coming up on OLR? And we would talk about that and talk about cruises and everything. And I think because I don't have my DNS server up and, you know, or it's not working, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. And Esther Matt's like, Rob on speakerphone, I'm not going to do that to y'all. That's not cool. So you know what? We're going to table this discussion for now. I'm not going to, and everybody's like, speakerphone, hold up to mic. That would make for a terrible audio podcast. And while there are ways to go get around it, that would make a terrible podcast, and I don't need to need to subject y'all to that. And I talked for too long anyway. I didn't even get to do my music break tonight, and but we're at time anyway. So here's what we're gonna do. I am gonna go ahead, and we're gonna say that the show's over. So thank you so much for being here. We had a bunch of basically my DNS server is down. Those of you on the podcast, you missed like 5 minutes of me trying to figure out why I couldn't like load a page on the web. And it turns out my DNS servers are down, so no new connections could be made. So that was a fun thing to come back to. It's so much fun. All right. So we'll pick this up next week. Thank you so much for being here. And Tiger Claw, I do not need tech support. I do network administration. I do not need your tech support. Thank you very much. So we will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. So catch us live and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a bumper if you want. I had an old, really old bumper queued up tonight that was relevant to what the day it is. But you can contact me on Discord. So I'm on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com. You can even find pictures of the stuff that I found on the cruise earlier. That is actually posted on my Blue Sky, and you can also find me on the Discord server. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this happen without the help of the live chatters who go above and beyond. The only one that I remember seeing is Sean322, cheered 200 bits, saying, "This is AI, Bobby. Bobby is still on the cruise." Yes. I'd love to interact more. I'd love to have talked about the laser discs I have next to me. I actually put some of my three Star Wars laser discs. These are not the widescreen editions. These are the full screen editions of the three Star Wars movies because it is May the 4th. I had those and, you know, just didn't get to really talk about them. So unfortunately, I don't have the other cool ones, but I did have this one. So I'm going to hit this button and we're going to get out of here. And maybe I'll be watching OLR tonight. I don't know. I'm going to be resetting my modem when this is done. But I'll see you all next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.